Well, I guess we get started as people are arriving. So this is really our last meeting, I think, for the semester. We certainly won't have one next Friday. And what I'll do is send out a schedule. I'm assuming this time works still for spring term. And that we'll do is every other week. So I guess that means we start on the 7th, which makes sense. So that way we also avoid Memorial Day weekend. So I'll get Faye to send out a invite for every 2 weeks starting May 7th for the meetings. But let me just start with a thank you. I'm not sure what we all thought when we started doing these Zoom meetings 13 months ago. But it's been a great way to get this project moving, and we've obviously huge achievements over the past year. And so I just owe you all a deep debt of gratitude, not a grid of datitude, but a debt of gratitude for your hard work, for your patience with me, for your diligence. And I'm really just so proud of what we've accomplished together, and it's, you know, your hard work has been key to that. So I just wanted to say thanks as we get started. And I did want to also let you know, speaking of the Bennett Collection, about my new exciting little I don't know what it to call it. Thing, this document I have. This is a book that I found on Amazon for $3. I didn't find it actually. Comfort Mtotha found it for me, and I discovered there was one copy left, so I immediately bought it for $3. Amazon's good for something. This is a piece of creative nonfiction written by a nurse who was a medical missionary to Mozambique in the late 1960s, who, when she then wrote a dissertation about medical missionaries, was gifted by a cousin a diary. You're going to blow you away, Beth. A diary written by the same people who collected all that stuff in our archives, the Bennetts.
No way.
And somehow Comfort made the connection online, and so now I have the book. And what we learned, we had to buy the book to find out that the diaries are still in her possession. And so I'm going to look through the book some and then share it with Comfort, but we might actually get some more information.
This is amazing. What are the chances?
I'm glad we found the documentation for it.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, she this how much this is, you know, she clearly says this is these are this book is based on the diaries, so it's like a fictional memoir-like narrative based on diaries. So how much she's fictional, we won't know unless she's willing to share the diaries with us. But I figure we should read it first and then figure out how to make contact with her. But
Wow. I just, whoa, this week. Okay, that just did it.
Wow. Awesome.
I know the chances of that.
I mean, you know, it still raises real questions about what we want to do, if we want to do anything with it, but at least we can make that decision based on information, not guesswork. So.
Wow. And I wonder why the couple wouldn't have wanted to give it back to this lady.
Well, it's not clear. I mean, again, that's an interesting question. I mean, it may be that the diaries was in the possession of somebody else, not the people who gave us the collection. It doesn't, it's also not clear. Well, my hunch is, although I could be wrong, that she got a hold of the diaries long after we received the rest of the collection, the parts of the collection we got.
Okay.
The book was published in 2007. Although it doesn't say when she did her, she says she got a doctorate from Georgia State, but it doesn't say when. So, I mean, there's obviously pieces of the story to figure out still, but.
My goodness. My goodness. Okay.
I look forward to it because we could potentially learn a lot from that.
I know.
Yeah, we could learn. I mean, and I think Comfort in particular, who's really interested in these issues about the role of missionaries and collections and display and all those issues. I think, you know, this could be really useful for her, whether it's something that we will ever want to highlight. I don't know, but at least we can answer the questions.
Right. It,
so as many
of the diaries, my internet's been glitching, so I missed some of your explanation, Matthew. So are the diaries on which this is based, are they in the DAS collection or we don't know where they are?
No, they're in the possession of the author of this book. She seems to be a family member, a cousin, somehow related also to the Bennetts. Although from her description, she implies she didn't know anything about them until she got the diaries. So I've only read the intro. Her primary message seems to be that the missionary societies don't treat the missionaries as humanely as they should. That's an interesting approach to the issue.
It's a new take on what's wrong with the missionary societies.
Exactly.
I can't even believe this.
Well, see, I don't often get to shock you, Beth. So this is doubly made my day.
This just left me.
Beth without words. You saw it here first, folks. Anyway, so as I read it and as I get comfort to look at it, we'll have more to report. But I thought that
was okay.
So Stephen, do you want to say anything about your event last night, which was really extraordinary?
I have somebody let in the house. I might have to move in a second. So I'll say that, I was really happy with the students and happy for them and proud of them. Got a good turnout, which was really encouraging. I uploaded to the 50th Drive, the recording, the Zoom recording, as well as the slides. And there's two set of slides there. One is the bio slides. Each student in the class did their own bio slide. One's not there, so there's 10 of the 11. And then the other set of slides is what they presented last night, which you see in the video. So I think that's all to share about that.
It was amazing. They did incredible projects and you could just tell how it was a time when you could see, it is DAS in action. You know, mm-hmm. You could see how they had become motivated and really moved by research. And I wrote Brian because, you know, the Bentley and those who work so hard, you know, librarians and mm-hmm. archivists often don't get much acclaim. So the thought of, you know, them having helped with that, it was just that it was so incredible. The kids were great. They really were.
So one thing that occurred to me, it made me think is maybe we ought to have, or I'm interested in your response, a category called undergraduate presentations that we could put that recording and other kinds of things that use other undergraduates who use our either the website or the Bentley Holdings to develop things. And the reason that occurred to me is as a separate category was I would want people, I think preserving that and making it public available would be great, but it's obviously those are very different kinds of presentations than the exhibits or something. Where, so I wouldn't want to categorize them with that. But I thought particularly the testimonials about what it meant for them to be able to go into the archives and access this historical material were really, you know, I just think that's a really great thing for people to be able to see. So it would take to make it seem something more than that would involve work, but whereas we could just put the video up there and it would be what it is and people would understand what it is. So.
And I think at that point about the archive, one of the things that the students really didn't really make clear last night was in the main, they were in the cast collection. Mm-hmm. Some of them did stuff from other collections, Keith right. with Mark Wallace and others, but it all started from the cast collection. So, I mean, that could be a way to do what you're talking about, the framing, Matthew, is that it's our department's archival collection. Mm-hmm. So these are presentations that grew out of the students' engagement with
undergraduate presentations based on the collection. Right. No, that would be right, the framing. I think that's right.
Or through their engagement with it or something. Because, again, some of them are actually not based on.
Well, but it's clear that they learned about these events.
Right.
So even if it's...
Right.
And pedagogically, it makes it. We don't want to restrict them, right? To that only
right,
that
right, right. That's how. All right.
But if it's the launching point, I mean, I think that makes that really, really works.
And the 50th was a big part of the launching point of the class. I mean, the course already existed before that, but I framed it this iteration as the 50th. So.
I thought, was it Lauren's testimony to looking at the syllabi from the 70s and how that influenced her course proposal? That was. Mm-hmm. It was a very special moment that actually came up in the retreat this morning too. So that was great testimony.
And I'll just reiterate Beth's point. She was speaking about Brian, which is Brian Williams, one of the Bentley archivists who was there last night. Mm-hmm. But I worked with three of them, Cinda, Brian, and Sarah, and they were great.
Three of them were there, at least for part of last night.
I saw their names, but I didn't see them there. But yeah. But they met with the students, came to class a couple of times, but worked with students outside of class. So that I really want to make sure we, as Beth said, acknowledge them. And this was just all digital. So, I mean, you said them getting into the archives before and presumably after the pandemic, they had and
what really getting the archives.
I could really see some great.
And that's the beauty, I think, of the cycle that, because of the students' demands in BBUM, the archives were digitized, so they would be accessible.
Right.
Other than that, they would not have been.
Yeah, I tried to hammer that home in the beginning.
Oh, you did. They got it. I thought they got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. I thought the students were... you could see their care for each other as well and the warmness that they had for each other. That was just really awesome to say that, to see that combined with like the brilliant, historical work that they're doing and also their political radicalism, the combination of those three things together, that was awesome. I'm sure a lot of it is down to your approach, Stephen.
Well, thank you. I was sorry, Chair. I jumped in because I was so excited to hear you say that because of a special moment that one of the students shared afterwards. We stayed on, so I got to go get this. But Beth, you want to share? I mean, we don't. Just at least the spirit of Chandra. Remember what Chandra shared at the end?
Oh my goodness, Chandra had such a beautiful moment. She's a returning student. She and Keith both are returning students to campus. And she spoke about how having been here 20 years ago, beginning her career, and then what it meant to her to have some place that she felt comfortable returning to, everybody was in tears. She just really spoke from the heart and said that, you know, DAS got her through it. And, you know, it is extraordinary for students to leave and come back after 20 years to finish their degrees, now with two children. She's living in Chicago, She's one of the boxes you'll be mailing out, Wayne. She's just amazing, you know, to have that fortitude to press through, you know, so many other folks, you know, walk away and, you know, never finish that degree. And she really was, I'm so glad she had the opportunity to take Stephen's class as a capstone, because it helped to, you know, just put that cherry on the top for her about coming full circle and how, because of that, you know, she decided to become a DAS major, and that's why she wanted to finish up in DAS. It was beautiful. I know we didn't record it, and there's a part of me that wishes we had, but on the other hand, there was something so intimate about it that I'm kind of glad we didn't. So it's one of those things where, you know, just a window in, and Keith too, for him to say, you know, me too, you know, I came back, he was in the 2000s, but she was back from the 90s. So, you know, here are these two folks who've been out of the game for a while, and to come back in, wow, it was great.
It was also great to be able, because Keith, I met with Keith right at the beginning of the semester, and to be able to have that class and have it, because it filled exactly what he needed. And I knew that it would, you know, just be a space where that sense of connection could be rebuilt for him. So it was exciting to see that it worked.
And that was another little sidebar moment afterwards when Stephen, they got to hear how Keith's whole project was, you know, connected to a professor who was here at U of M, who had been my graduate advisor in the master's program in journalism, and how racist this man had been, and my experiences with him, that I told him if I had known, I would have told him and could have predicted that this was exactly what this man would have done.
Ooh. Let me tell y'all, so I forget about how to leave. I missed previous conversation, but I think it doesn't matter. So, you know, after the end, we stayed on, the students and Beth and I. And the first thing that when everyone else was gone was said, was Beth said, Keith, let me tell you. She blurted. She was like, she's been holding that in. That what's his name? Weinsdorf, the professor.
Weisendraff.
She said, Keith, let me tell you. Professor, I had Weisendraff.
I just can't describe to you all. I mean, you know, when you hear about microaggressions and what professors, how they can impact students, because of that man, I never went into journalism, because he had sent me to Kentucky as my internship, and it was so terrifying and horrible there that, you know, they were sending me on like dark roads, like riding past Klan rallies, just things that I had never experienced as a child from the Midwest. And so, you know, going through that as a graduate student, and Dalapo and Tara, I pray that you never have to endure the kind of things that some people do. But, you know, it really brought home to me the impact of how professors have on students. So it's really interesting, because there's now a thread running on there's a Big Ten alumni for Black students. It's the Big Ten Alumni Network. And the thread running now are what professors impacted you. And I almost put that man's name down, but I didn't. I went with the positive folks.
You kept it positive.
You did better than me. I tattled on mine. She got a reviewer in her class the rest of the year.
Well, he was the head of the program, so there was nobody to tattle to.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
And he seemed to be, Keith unearthed seemed to show he was tied in with Shapiro and Wallace in ways outside of U of M. So this may have come up when I had to step away, but can I say quickly that Keith and Chandra both are returning students. So I imagine you were talking, and I think that they are the two strongest presentations to projects, I want to say, because the presentations were just a part of their project. So Keith actually has many more slides than what he shared. Matthew, he got into the Hate to Hate Produce, which is, you know, mm-hmm. of course, which is one of the things that helped to launch in 1959, we helped launch Mark Wallace, but he got into Louis Lomax, and Louis Lomax was who actually found that project. So he got into a lot of great stuff. So the two of them, I think they're, in terms of the overall projects, it really did. So I'm just really so proud of them as returning students who did some great work, some really great work.
Well, again, if they, you know, if what they hand in is close to being, you know, whether it's just slides or whether it's recorded over slides or whatever, to being strong enough to being on the website under an undergraduate research presentations menu as distinct things, I don't see any reason not to do that.
So I will suggest ones, and then I bring it to the group. We can talk about what the process is to figure that out.
Sure.
Okay. So
And I think, you know, I think I can see two outcomes. One is yes, and the other is, well, if the student's willing to do X, Y, Z to bring it up to some, you know, some whatever bar we come up with, and, you know, then and just treat it as an optional thing. We'd love to be able to present your work. We think you need to do the following things. We totally understand if you're done. That's fine too. Okay.
So I could bring that to our next meeting, but that's 2 weeks from now. And in terms of,
feel too late to you?
Well, just trying to communicate, not too late, but it might be, it's in terms of communicating to the students, something is better if I think I do it, you know, early next week after they've submitted the projects and I'll be grading them. So
we could do a separate meeting for that for whoever's interested to have that conversation next week.
How about this? How about I just say, because they already know that the website has been part of it, and the prospect of them putting something there has been the whole time. So how about the ones that I think there's something there, I just really unofficially communicate to those students, hey, I want to talk, you know, we may want to see about something.
I mean, I think that's right. We can just have you do A, which is, this is something we would consider.
Okay.
And then we can all look at it when we have a little more time and decide either it's ready to go or we'd like them to do X, Y, and Z to it. But okay. If you make it clear to them that it'll be one or the other.
Okay.
Let's just use you as the kind of first
step. Okay.
First evaluate, which makes sense, but you talk to class. So I think we, you know, the only question will be whether we want them to do a little bit more work or not.
Okay. Well, I can already tell you those two most likely, but yeah, I'll do that and then report back for next class. I mean, next meeting.
I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, obviously, he gave the shortest presentation, and I, you know, if you tell me no way, I would get that. But, you know, Justin's work on, is it Justin? No, what's his name? Josh's work on Ron Johnson. I mean, that's the actual thing he found is extraordinary, right?
Right.
Depending on how much more he has.
I don't know yet how much he has. So he hasn't.
Yeah. No, I understand. So I'm just saying that's.
Right.
Topically, they're all great.
Right.
Maybe that's what I should be saying.
I was also thinking, Matthew, to your idea of having a blog section that you floated a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
that could also be a space perhaps for the students. So instead of being under the category of sort of undergraduate projects, maybe if they wanted to adapt their project into a blog post, then for them, that's also like a nice thing to have a piece of public history out there.
Sure.
And for a blog post, they could take one portion of their project, right?
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't talk have more to... personally about their experience of it as well, right? Right.
So can I tell them that this blog post may be a possibility?
Is a possibility. Yeah, maybe let's just say any one of them could do a blog post, whatever judgment you have about their presentation.
I'll say that the Bass 50th is considering having blog posts on the site. Any of you, if you're interested, some of your project could be there, please let me know or let us know.
So, for example, the student government guy, I mean, his blog post would be a fascinating thing to have up there. And just his comments yesterday about how he feels like the central student government people don't understand Black students' experiences and how he's trying to fill that. It's fascinating.
So that was Ben. And a fascinating and relevant for us part of his trajectory is he had classes with Sandra and at least one other DAS class, maybe CMR, but I know Sandra. I talked with Sandra about his trajectory, which very much framed and shaped his trajectory and how he came to that project. So mm-hmm. previous DAS professor and class are very much built into mm-hmm. what he, his analysis.
Great. I should say that I don't know if Tara and Tahir, if you've met with Tahir yet, but the plan for the discussion, the video stuff that Danny did, it was amazing to see. It's amazing footage, and she really compiled it well. We want to talk a little bit about framing of it and whether it should be a distinct section mm-hmm. of the final thing, the broader thing that Tahir and Tara are working on, or whether we might ask her to just disperse it throughout the whole thing. We haven't figured all that out. But we're definitely, really excited to use that material in the finished product.
Yeah, agreed. I haven't had the chance to talk to Tahir yet and get his thoughts on it. But I'll send him the link now that, Stephen, you mentioned it's uploaded there. So, I thought it was really good. She picked some really interesting pieces of footage. And as Matthew says, either could be interspersed with the whole documentary, or if it's its own section on sort of like Black creativity and community building at DAS, then it might need some more editorial interventions just to help explain where each piece of footage comes from and how it fits in with the story that we're telling. But that's for going forward. So Tahir and I will chat to Danny about it next week.
Yeah, no, and also just some framing about the central importance of African influenced music and dance to the cultural life of Black studies in the 1970s, yeah. Right? Exactly, and more broadly to Black power, right? She just, that just needs to be put in there so that it explains why it's in the larger piece.
Mm-hmm. That could be a voiceover, that could be some text written there, exactly. That could be different right. ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
And it really connects with the reasons why we still continue to have things like Kwanzaa celebrated in a department, as opposed mm-hmm. to a cultural right. event that right. is one of our, keystone events mm-hmm. throughout the year.
Actually, is there still a gospel or Black student choir on campus? Or is that not?
I've heard there is. I don't know what happened during the pandemic, but the Gospel Chorale, I know maybe it was 2 years ago, they had me judge a karaoke contest they had, which is kind of bizarre for a Gospel Chorale to have karaoke.
Not bizarre, it's just the culture of the young people, Beth.
it was very interesting. It was secular music. I guess they invited me because a guy came dressed as Prince and threw his guitar at me. I don't know what that was about, but you just never know with our student organizations what you're headed into.
Well, the gospel group. Don't laugh. So the gospel group did an event, but there was not gospel and there was not actual singing. Gotcha.
No, exactly. So there you have.
So Beth, we go a couple months without the talk and all of a sudden you're judging this type of thing.
Who did you pick?
Well, it was crazy. I'll have to just tell you, it was just a mess. It was.
Well, if they have any ephemera, like a poster from relatively recent of a gospel choir chorale event, that would be lovely to add into that. Kristen, just to connect past and present. So
okay, I'll ask some of the alum because
it doesn't have to be even if it's not active because of the pandemic. If it was 2 years ago, that's good enough for the documentary.
Yeah, that would be interesting. As you saw from what Danny put together, we're going with this aesthetic of like the 70s kind of black and white. But I do wonder if the whole documentary at 10 minutes is black and white like that, then it might feel, maybe it needs some splashes of color footage and so on as well. I don't know what you guys thought.
I think I had questions about some of it because it was really interesting, but I didn't have a lot of context. So kind of like what everyone said. Was the dance video like early Stomp? Because I saw some of those influences. I was really curious about it. So it's still a huge thing at Flint campus. So it'd be really sweet to see it here and kind of the origins of that and to learn more about it.
Yeah, and I know I can definitely get in touch with Courtney Monroe, who was also a DASI, and she runs the Office for Greek Life, the NPHC, so she can let me know. But I know they still have the step shows. Again, with the pandemic, they didn't. But I mean, even I know from my generation on, it was usually like the last day of classes, there was a huge step show in the field house. And I don't know when that changed over, but then they moved to Power Center. It's been around on campus. So again, following up and following that trail as to, you know, what they're doing now, I can find out about that too.
That'd be really interesting because it's just very present in Flint. Like it's just all the time. It's not just at the end of the year. So it'd be interesting to learn more.
Oh yeah, they do it at events. It's like, again, you don't want to be sitting there and then suddenly step shows come just dancing through the aisles and you never know, you know, you just have to kind of everybody quickly moves their chairs out the way. Because once they start coming, it's not stopping. So
oh, it's a lot of energy. I definitely watch from a distance, but it was definitely really, really interesting. So I'd like to see our connections to that because I know it's still really important on Flint campus.
Oh yeah, it's definitely here. It's just, you know, I know they're, I keep telling them to be prepared because once we come back to campus, I really feel like there's going to be just such a huge explosion of energy from not only the fact that we're going to have two incoming freshie classes who haven't been full on campus all year, but also the other class that got only half a semester, you know, only got one semester. You've just got a bunch of people who haven't been present on campus and they're all going to want to be doing things. So we're actually, BSU is going to move Umoja over to the field, the big field in front of Mojo, because it's not going to be able to be sustained in the Diag. It's just going to be too many kids.
I just typed in the YouTube search, University of Michigan Step Show, and most of what I got is the marching band, but there were two Kappa ones, one from 2013, one from 2019, a step show and a cane show. So I put that link in just to the search. I'm sure there's a lot more if you go further, particularly if you put in Black Greek step show or something, you probably get more. Mm-hmm. I think maybe what we could, one idea, Tara, occurs to me is just at the end, like in color, more modern images that are similar, whether they are performance or professors doing something. I mean, any kind of just quick flashing of lots of images to suggest the continuity without actually having to do anything with it might be cool. So
I like that idea. Oh, yeah.
I wish we could find that clip of when you said about Black celeb, Stephen. There was one Black celeb when James and Matlock and some of the others all started stepping when the Alphas came out. And it was amazing because they had no idea these grown old men were going to jump up and start attempting to step with them. And I say attempting because it was
about 40. I've seen it. Our fraternity brothers in Flint are very strong. So anytime they get together, it's a lot of energy.
And they are planning a huge homecoming this year. So I don't know how they're going to do this, but they still want social distancing, but they're going to have a full day of just events. So I know there'll be lots of stepping if we don't have any. I mean, if we want to have something up to the present, whatever happens this homecoming, and I think it's in September, so it should be still warm, hopefully. But
yeah, I'll try to hit you up and see if we can find a student that probably has a video. We don't need anything super fancy, but it'd be cool to have the comparison from before and now.
That'll be great. Thank you.
Don't tell anybody, but my first attempt to do Black Greek step show and the search was Black Geek step show. And so don't tell them I said did that.
Comic-Con is valid.
I keep calling my sister a blurred in here and she's not happy.
No, black nerds are all the rage right now, I'm told.
And black academics, they have it's just all these new little names folks are coming up with, but it's too much.
All right, so before we get too silly, any other pieces of business, updates, things we need to grapple with before we all go into full-blown end-of-semester graduation mode?
Tara, you want to tell them about the interview Monday?
Yeah, sure. Beth and Ashley and I had a wonderful interview and chat with Andre and Janae, who are DAS alums from... When was it, Beth, that they graduated roughly?
2005.
Okay, yeah. So they told us about their experiences in DAS and really sort of spoke to the way that DAS had sort of changed their life trajectories in terms of the courses that they took and the community that they found and the study abroad programs that they did and how that changed the way that they reflect on themselves. And yeah, it was awesome. Really enjoyed it. They're both wonderful people. So thanks, Beth, for setting that up.
My pleasure. They're just so great. And again, they brought up some different issues than I had even anticipated. You know, some things I knew they were going to speak to, but they talked very bitterly about the move to Haven Hall and how upset they were that their home was being usurped. They felt it was like gentrification. And I just find that really interesting because I know my heart broke when we were forced to move. But at the time, because it was winter, there was no opportunity for protest or anything like that. And it was pretty much a done deal because of the dean wanting to have the ethnic power tower, as she called it. So, you know, it was really an interesting to hear it from them. I was just really surprised.
Yeah, they said it felt like they were moving into this new kind of corporatized academic space at the time in Haven Hall, rather than this place off to the side that they had carved out for themselves.
That's fascinating.
It is. Like you said, Beth, I would have not anticipated that students would have felt so strongly about the move.
Because, well, you know, we had built such a, it, you know, with the wood and the way that library looked.
No, that library, I mean, that's right. That library, you can see why that.
That's the big, one of the big things, the library, right?
And it was kind of like the central station, yeah, you know, right, with the foyer there. Because that's where they were teasing and talking about. We had so many events in that foyer on the second floor, and that's where Malcolm and Martin resided, in that hallway. Uh-huh. So it was like, whenever we had events, that's exactly where they were held.
Meanwhile, the faculty got gentrified offices. I'm sorry, Tara.
Why did that happen? Why did the move happen?
Well, I mean, that's right. So there was there was for a very short period of time, a dean who wanted to put DAS and AC in the same building next to each other. And AC, which had terrible space, for AC, it was a huge step up, the Haven Hall space. Whereas for DAS, I mean, you could argue that that Haven is a little bit, it was just, you know, it was in some ways a nicer space. Although, but not larger, and it clearly has much less functional common areas, right, than the West Hall space. It's the first floor of West Hall where Anthro is. First and second floor.
First and second.
So it wasn't. It was much more of a lateral move for DAS in terms of space, and I, you know,
in terms of amount of space, you're saying, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of the configuration of space, it was a loss because we didn't have a open area. Now,
my only experience over there, I was a postdoc over there, and I had the worst office on campus. So for me, it wasn't.
Which one?
I think it got configured out, but it was this little tiny, no windows, in the middle, on the first floor, in the middle there. I mean, as a post black, I was very I only used it to meet with students, and it was fine, but
storage space.
Yeah, probably storage space now. That's right.
Yeah. And the murals. I mean, Professor Lockhart had painted murals in our front office.
Right.
was, you know, this huge sun with beams glowing out. It was just beautiful. So, it was a big change for us.
And the other interesting thing was that a lot of what Andrea and Janae were saying about what they were, the kind of activist work that they were doing as students, echoed what was said by the BAM people. So I'd just been watching that interview with Ron Harris, right, Matthew, I confuse the two, Ron Woods and Ron Harris, of sort of going to the history department and having to fight to have Black history be taken seriously beyond the history of slavery, for example. And Andre and Janae talked about exactly those battles in other departments and it being really rewarding to be in a place like DAS where they could, they could do more kind of critical research. It wasn't bound in that, or marginalized in that same way. Mm-hmm. So those like generational struggles really came through strongly, I thought, from the interview too.
So thank you. And so this is all transcribed and will get posted and all of that.
Oh yeah, that I have to send it over. I'll convert it.
There's no rush. I mean, it's just a reminder every time we do oral history of how much more we can do with oral histories, and it's an endless. And you know, we should just keep at it because they're really so rich. Sure, go ahead, Helen.
Could we add Chandra to that list to interview? She's about to be alumni, and I think having maybe her story of coming back would be really important to kind of look towards the future of how we document things too. I'd really love to hear more from her after a presentation. So little bit of a personal, but I also think she'd be great.
Yeah, or maybe even her and Keith together would be interesting. I mean, yeah. So that's, I think, a really good idea.
Beth, which folder are we using for these interviews? Are we going to put them in oral history or alum oral history project?
Is that where I put the other one?
I wasn't sure.
So far we've been putting them in oral history, and then they each get their own folder with the name of the person being interviewed. Any of the new interviews, if they don't already have clip markings or annotations, they have not been clipped yet.
And how does the transcription process work? Because I know like when Dolapa and I did the interview with Deborah Robinson, we have, from the CC, we have that transcript.
Yes.
Are we still running it through some other software, or would one of us go through that and correct the issues in it?
Go ahead, sorry.
For oral histories that have the live transcript feature, we have not been running it through the program just because it does require a cost. But for things that do not have that feature already, especially the archived materials, that's what we have the funding to run through the program.
Okay, got it. Okay.
But we do need someone to listen to the tape and compare it to the transcript and do the corrections. And it makes sense. I mean, where possible, if it's the same person, right, they can also think about how to chop it up, in essence, how to create mini oral histories that are annotated so people know what the subject matter is, so that people don't have to listen to the whole interview in order to find whatever it is. Future researchers won't have to listen to the whole interview to find whatever it is they're looking for in the interview, which I think is really important for undergrads, to be frank, right? So that if undergrads are going to use this material, they're not going to sit through a two-hour interview to try to find that one nugget like some crazy nerdy grad student would do. but And be fascinated the whole time by everything else, but what you're looking for, right?
I feel personally affronted.
So there's a lot of history people in here.
And then forget what it is you came for in the first place. But rather, so if we can annotate that, I think that's really worked well, and it's going to make it much more usable material for undergraduate teaching and for, you know, alums who wander in and things too. So.
I have another question about the Google Drive. So I was trying to move stuff around, like I was trying to move Deborah Robinson stuff out of the Nisha folder, but it seems like I don't have permissions to move things. Does anyone know about that?
That would be me. It depends on how you're trying to move it, because some, if you're trying to move individual files versus trying to move a whole folder, unfortunately, Drive isn't always that great when it comes to moving folders. Okay. I'm going to check your access keys right now. But if you were trying to move a whole folder, there's a possibility that you won't be able to do that just because sometimes Google Drive doesn't allow that.
Okay, I see. Okay, as both files and folders have the move to option is grayed out. So thanks, Ariel, for checking that.
While Ariel's doing that, I think I'll take a moment to report no progress as of yet with regard to our storage in some respects. 25 terabytes takes some time to provision, and that's where we are right now. While that is happening, I think we may still need to work through some of the details that are associated with access. I've had a community created, and I may have to change the nature of that community such that when someone's requesting access to that storage, it could hit all of our inboxes, because all of us here on this call are members in that group that was created. So I hope to have Joe Bauer and John's resolution in the upcoming week so that I can brief everyone on what we look like going forward. But I was able to determine that the $230 a year cost is before the cost share. By the time the college's cost share kicks in, our annual cost for the 25 terabytes is like $30. So it's a pittance in comparison. So that's all I had to report, unless Ariel, you or Helen picked up something that I might've missed from the last round of communications.
No, that's kind of what I got from it.
Well, I do have one thing for the Dropbox shared drive. If there's anyone else that needs to be added, if they just get added to the M community that Wayne created, they should be all set to get added. If they have any access issues, feel free to send me a message. But as of right now, it's shared to everyone that's on that M community.
Did I see there was some sort of May 1st deadline for
Dropbox creation?
Dropbox. You haven't done it yet. There is some. I can't imagine they'll keep you from doing it after May 1st, but
they won't keep you. But the reason that deadline is there is because basically what's going to start happening over the summer is people are going to get transitioned over, and all the files will start getting transitioned over. And if you do not have a Dropbox account created, any MBox materials that you have that you do not personally own will not get shared with you again. So you'll have to go through the share process again. So for everyone
here, conversion of MBox to Dropbox, that's the May 1st.
Yes,
because they're going to start that process. So for everyone here and all of your colleagues, please, please, please tell them to make a Dropbox account, even if they don't plan on using it that often, because if they're shared on anything, if they don't have an account by the time those files are being transferred from MBox, they won't get access.
So the carrot becomes, if you have created the account, the data is moved for you without you needing to do anything else.
You know, that was great when it happened for me. I was very excited.
Ariel, would you recommend, like, if, for example, if you already have a large personal Dropbox, I already have a large personal Dropbox, which is on my desktop as well as in the cloud. Which is not on my UMish account, should I create a separate UMish Dropbox and keep those two separate, do you think, or should I try and combine them?
For personal files, just because you may not always want your personal documents being related to your U of M account, I would still keep them separate. Just
okay.
I'm wary of everything because ITS could access just about anything that's under your username.
I see.
But still make the account, because if people are trying to share to you, you won't get it if you don't have an account.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks.
I echo that recommendation.
Your message, Ariel, is everyone should create, if they don't already, create a Dropbox account next week before the first, correct?
Yes, just to be safe.
Now, I will say that I merged my Dropbox with U of M. You know, on the theory that there's so much data, anything I'm trying to hide, nobody's going to look for it anyway, so that's fine. But so that's it's just a different way of managing the problem. It's not a recommendation, just telling you how I do it. So
okay.
I would add the caveat that if a lot of your files are very large and that if you're paying for that storage, then definitely transfer that over, because U of M is covering a lot more storage than, and so you don't personally have to pay for it. But if you do have documents that may be personal documents that you don't necessarily want for you to see, then keep them separate.
Right, so that's the carrot for merging them, is that they'll pay for the extra amount of storage. All right, so for now, I think that's enough for today. Obviously, if anything comes up in the next 2 weeks that you don't want to wait or can't wait to reach out, whether it's technical stuff, obviously to Helen, Ariel, and Wayne, if it's content stuff you want to run by me as well, I'm very happy to look at that. One thing I hope we'll do May is try to make some decisions about what our capacity is for doing more oral histories this summer. I want to keep that momentum going. I do think that we will probably go to this every other week model. Well, certainly through the whole summer, and maybe it might well be continue that in the fall. Unless we have a compelling reason to do it weekly. And then if we do have a compelling reason to do it weekly, it probably won't involve me or Stephen weekly. We'll probably be doing every other week, given that we'll both be on leave. I will continue to see if we can get other faculty to join in the group, but that doesn't seem like an imperative to me. It feels like we can, between Stephen and I, can manage our roles even while on leave. So that's sort of my thinking about how to manage the leave time.
Well, I propose that the whole 50th committee go on sabbatical. And we can meet in the Red Rock Canyon.
I agree.
Yes, I recognize that you're referencing a little bit of privilege there, Beth, and point well taken.
So, what's the entertainment over there, Beth?
Well, you're 15 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, so you know you can be in the wilderness. Hour away, Valley of Fire. I mean, we got everything for you out there in Nevada.
California's not that far.
It's quick. Yep. 90-minute drive. I'm telling you. This is my current daydream of years to come.
So I don't know if you saw, but there's a Ed Theorist guy whose solution to the problem of higher ed access is to get these high prestige schools to create separate, to clone themselves, create separate campuses. So maybe what we need is a University of Michigan at Las Vegas campus.
Didn't we already clone ourselves though?
Well, you would have trouble politically with the Dearborn and Flint campuses if you decided to start one in Las Vegas, no question. But
well, I just was at that.
From a social justice standpoint, I think reinvesting in Flint and Dearborn would be the better answer. But
it really would be. It really though they are moving some of the med center out to Grand Rapids, because I know that they're going to start doing transplants over there. Mm. And Ann Arbor has in, you know, currently is the only U of M site where transplants are done. So they're on the move. So you never know. And I just attended the LEAD seminar on the strong connections that we have with so many programs between HBCUs and U of M. So I'll go out there and found a little HBCU, and because it'll be just me.
Best HBCU at Las Vegas.
Full attendance.
Long name.
That's what the acronyms are for.
It's going to be a long acronym.
Back to your mother. All right, y'all. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
I was going to ask Matthew Wayne, can we stay on 1 minute after and I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Please.
Sure. So again, let me just say thanks, everybody. This has been really, we're going to keep on keeping on. So it's nothing to end in, but just really appreciate all you've done this past year. We should all be patting ourselves on the back. So
thank all of you, honestly, for your help.
It's a team. It's a team.
Dream team.
Dream team. There you go.
So Wayne, I'll be on my way to you